I think you're going to enjoy this next presentation. It's a report about our brethren in India.
My dear brethren, first of all, I would like to tell you how happy we are to be here. Vernie and I have been working toward this end for 365 days, as most of you have also. We bring you the love and greetings of the brethren at the Portland class, the Associated Bible Students, and also the brethren who are at the Gresham Retirement Center also send their love to you. Happy to do this, and they're going to be picking up the things that have gone on this week on tape and video, and so they will get a large portion of the special goings on that we've had this week. We've already started these 2 days with a lot of blessings, and we expect many more. As Tim told you, we are going to bring to you for a little while some of the things that we saw in India, particularly our brethren there. I think most of us know the joy that we receive when we go to an ecclesia, to a group of brethren that we don't know much about. But after visiting them, we realize that they're consecrated, that they love the Lord, that they're giving their life to the Lord. And so we felt just that in India. And my prayer is that you will be blessed by this presentation. The harvest message came to India in the days of Brother Russell. Many of you have read the accounts in the reprints of the early work that was done there. The truth in India has survived against overwhelming odds, against all the pressures of Buddhism and Hinduism and Islam and atheism. The harvest message, I am so happy to say, shines in India like a small lighted candle set on a hill. India is huge. A single country the size of Europe, the population of almost 1 billion, grows at the rate of 1 million per month. In this teeming, chaotic environment, we find small but zealous groups of Bible students. They're strong in the faith. They have a clear understanding of present truth. They are rejoicing in the truth every day. Their zeal in witnessing and their thirst for more truth is amazing, considering their surroundings, considering that the Babylonish religions and worship are things that would sweep almost anybody off their feet because of their, the only word I have for it is terribleness. We have in our country never seen the likes of this. From the beginnings, almost 90 years ago, the truth message has been passed down to the present day. There are little ecclesias, as I've mentioned. The Bible students are mainly located in southern India. And the first Bible student convention in India was 71 years ago. Tim and I were privileged to attend this year's General Convention of the South India Bible Students and to visit the brethren in India for 11 days during the month of May. From London, we flew 9 hours to Bombay on the west coast of India, and from there south to Coimbatore, where the General Convention was to be held. 6 brethren met us at the airport. Now, I had traveled with Brother David Bruce to India 9 years ago, and that was a very blessed trip. And so this was my second visit to India. In the welcoming group were 3 brothers that you may be familiar with. They have all attended the International Convention: Brother Daniel, Brother Joseph, and Brother Kairupa. This is Brother Daniel from Bangalore. Brother Daniel is the secretary of the committee that we deal with. For approximately the last 30 years, the Brethren of the United States have worked in cooperation with this committee, which represents the Association of South India Bible Students. Brother Daniel is now retired from his post office with the National Railway, and he uses his free travel privileges to visit the various classes and branches of the association. Brother Joseph, who attended the International Convention in Debron, lives in the city of Coimbatore. He spent several years in a Catholic seminary training for the priesthood. That training gave him some understanding of both Greek and Hebrew, which he's able to share with the brethren and to use in his truth studies. Brother Joseph seems to have a gift for language. His English is excellent, and he uses his understanding of the local language for translating much of our truth literature. Brother Kairupa is also from Coimbatore. One of the younger leaders, he seems to be nicely assisted in his truth activities by his wife. At the convention, Sister Kairupa led the children's classes. There must have been 40 children in attendance. This is Sister Kairupa and Brother Kairupa's natural sister, Stella. The convention was held in a small compound in the middle of the city of Coimbatore. Despite the fact that we were in a busy part of town, we seemed to be nicely separated from the noise and confusion of the outside world. Most of the discourses were presented in the Tamil language. This is the language of the state of Tamil Nadu. Most of the brethren live in this state or in the states to the north, which is Karnataka. The language of Karnataka is called Kannada. India has 15 official languages, but also hundreds of minor tongues. Nationally, only 3% of the Indians speak English. But the brethren told us at the convention that about 75% of the brethren would understand what we said in English. The posters announcing the convention and the public meeting and the scripture banners were all in Tamil. The vast majority of our truth literature that has been translated into for the Indians by has been translated into Tamil. About 250 brethren attended the convention. One of the great differences from my trip 9 years ago was the status of the sisters. When I was there in 1983, the sisters were in the back of the hall, sitting on the floor. This is during their convention there. This year, the brothers sat on the right side and the sisters on the left. And they were all seated in chairs. We could see a dramatic improvement in the status of the sisters, which warmed our hearts. It was very hot in Coimbatore, well over 100 degrees. During one of the intermissions, I collected a fan club. The brethren were also extremely warm and friendly, and the children even more so. Much of our contact with India for the last 50 years has been through a committee of brethren from the Northwest. The contacts became more organized when, about 30 years ago, the Dawn helped to organize a committee of Indian brethren to consolidate our contacts. Large quantities of literature were sent, and some translations into local languages were made. Not all the efforts to help went well. In several cases, the funds intended for witness or spiritual activities were misappropriated and used for the personal gain of the person entrusted with the funds. About 10 years ago, the Northwest Committee for India decided that if we were to avoid such problems, we needed to have more personal contact with the Indian brethren. This would mean more visits, more eye-to-eye contact, and would hopefully result in more understanding and less problems. Over the past 10 years, different brethren, in cooperation with the Northwest Committee and in cooperation with the Dawn, have visited the brethren in India. This includes David and Shirley Bruce, Rick and Roberta Buss, Gilbert Rice, myself, and most recently, Tim. Let me tell you a little more about the Association of Bible Students whom we deal with in India. This group represents about 90% of the consecrated brethren in India. There are 15 ecclesias which comprise the association. The largest class is in Coimbatore. At the last memorial, 80 consecrated partook. On Sunday, they will have 140 at their meeting. That includes about 25 to 30 children. Several classes have about 30 members, half of which would be consecrated. And the classes go down in size to several that are five in number. This is the committee that we deal with. The American visitors are wearing the welcome garlands given to them on their arrival. We didn't feel so great about that, I've got to confess. In addition to our personal contacts, funds are sent to India for projects the Northwest Committee feels are spiritually oriented. Funds are provided for a monthly magazine, most of it translated from Dawn articles. A Tamil typewriter and a duplicator were provided. Funds were provided to print a manna, and various tracts. And plans are now in process to print the second volume and the Creator's Grand Design. The recent efforts seem to have improved the situation. We now feel that we work with a fine group of brethren, and each year our understanding of the Indian situation seems to grow. If you remember, my dear brethren, only one thing from this report, I hope it is this. The brethren in India eagerly want more true literature, both for study and for witnessing. This means booklets, volumes, and tracts. They would love to have up-to-date media presentations for public witnessing, like the slide presentations that we use. To be effective in a land where only 3% of the nation understands English, the materials need to be in their own language. If we, for instance, tonight listen to our public meeting, think how effective this presentation tonight would be in India in their own language. Most of the classes only elect one elder. They annually elect one elder, and frequently he seems to be the oldest. They elect an assistant elder and a secretary. Together they arrange for the meetings and decide who gives discourses each week. For example, even though there is only one elder in Coimbatore, 6 or 7 brethren regularly give discourses and perform the duties of our elders. Another slight difference might be the percentage of discourses to studies. In most American classes, discourses are given once a week. In Portland, for instance, we have a discourse only once a month, unless we have visitors. All the rest of our meetings are studies of some sort. In most of the Indian classes, the meetings are almost all discourses. This tradition probably comes from the fact that they had very little material from which to study. You can't study if you don't have books, and you can't have books that are of some other tongue for them to study if they don't read that particular tongue. Again, if we could help them print more Bible student material, more could participate in the studies and the meetings. In the discourses we presented, our topics included evidences of spirit begettal, consecration, Christian living, the ending of the Gentile times, the second presence, Israel's prophetic restoration, and the harvest. We also presented a report concerning what our fundamental doctrines were, what the different activities were of the brethren in America, and what our purpose was in visiting India. In all cases, the response was absolutely enthusiastic. They asked us questions such as things about the time of the end. They asked, is it still proper to partake of the memorial since the Lord has returned? Do we have any proof of what happened to the 10 lost tribes? Did God provoke David to take a census, or was it Satan who provoked David? You know, the scriptures say it both ways. Some of them wanted to know, was Jesus in the tomb 3 full days, or was it only parts of 3 days? And so the impossible to answer questions made us feel right at home. They also asked us how we conduct our meetings and what kind of public witnessing we do. We noticed that their music books have words only. No notes, no chord symbols, which, you know, we're not used to that. The accompanists play whatever they want, when they want, and it only sometimes fits the melody of the hymn. It was particularly hard on the ears of the American music man who accompanied me on the trip. They sing many of our hymns, but because of the lack of music, the melodies have been altered through time. They also have a number of their own hymns, but even with the problems of the accompanying instrumentation, the enthusiasm with which they sang the hymns was just outstanding and very thrilling. The children's classes were a big part of the convention. After their lessons, they were tested on what they learned, and small prizes were given to those who had good attendance and good test scores. The honored American visitor handed out the small rewards as the names were announced. They also asked me to open the first copy of the recently printed manna book. This has been translated into Tamil, and they were very excited about having this daily spiritual food in their own language. Notice the symbol on the podium in the front. It looks like a Star of David with the menorah. They didn't use a cross and crown. Perhaps they felt it was too close to the cross and crown that the Baptists use. They also asked us why we use so many hymns from the nominal churches. There are so many Christian groups in India that have hymns that are pretty much like ours. They don't realize that we've changed a lot of the words in those hymn books. Dinner time. They asked us if we wanted to eat Indian food or go back to the hotel. We said we would eat what they were eating. The meals served are on palm leaves. One brother walks through the dining hall and scoops out generous portions of rice. And you may not believe this, but our loyal bookkeeper from downstairs, Mike Wallach, looked like one of those brothers passing out rice. They eat with their right hands. It doesn't matter if you are a banker or a laborer. The custom in southern India is that you eat with your right hand. In addition to the rice, you get a small scoop of yogurt or lamb stew, highly spiced with cayenne pepper and some other spicy sauce. They also have a tradition that is something like a christening or a dedication of children. The brothers came up to Tim and said that a brother and a sister had recently had a new baby and that Kim was to name the baby. Well, the first thought that Tim had was whether to name the baby after his mother or his aunt. But the brothers continued on and said that they would tell him what the name of the baby was, and that he would just have to announce it. That was all he had to do. And so the convention was quite pleased to receive that little new child. This is the Sunday meeting hall of the Coimbatore class. 80 consecrated. Their elder, Brother Sigamani. After the convention ended in Coimbatore, it was arranged that we travel north to a small congregation located in the mountains. We traveled by taxi. It was a 3-hour drive one way, and it cost $12. What a bargain. The mountains of southern India are filled with tea plantations. We're up about 8,000 feet above sea level, and I was getting lightheaded from the altitude. A dear brother accompanied us, Brother Abraham. He provided translation to the driver and also knew where we were to go. We had a wonderful day of fellowship with Abraham. Abraham contracted polio when he was a young boy. It crippled him and stunted his growth. But spiritually, what a jewel. And we thank God that he put him in our midst on this journey. We stayed in a YWCA. There were no hotels available. Previously, it must have been quite a place. Now it is run down a bit. The room cost us $5 for two for one night. Not bad. The sign in the doorway said, "Please keep your doors and windows shut, or the monkeys will come in and create havoc." So we kept them tight. We asked the clerk if that was really true. She said, "Certainly. If you have any fruit, especially bananas, they'll come in and snatch it." That afternoon, they had tea out on the veranda. A monkey came and stole the sugar bowl. All of the brethren we came in contact with seemed to hold the same views as we have regarding the day we live in, that we are in the harvest of the gospel age, that the church is not yet complete, that the new covenant has not started, and that the kingdom is still future. Brother George is the elder of the Kannur class. Brother George has his own business. His sons work with him in the business, and they are probably some of the best off materially of our Indian brethren. The entire family and class are very active in witnessing and attending meetings. They composed a welcome song for us and even painted the meeting hall in honor of our visit. We enjoyed seeing the chart of the ages, the painting of the tabernacle, Daniel's image, and the pyramid. It was evidence that they hold the same things dear that we do. The brothers of the class notice the welcome garlands again. Brother George's two sons, Joshua and George Kumar. Incidentally, the music here was excellent. Good singers, good musicians, even though they also didn't have any music books. The sisters of the class. two of Brother George's daughters. We enjoyed the India Brethren so much. We found them to be a beautiful people, physically as well as spiritually. The sisters dressed in their simple saris, which gave them such an elegant look. From Kannur, we again traveled north. The road took us through two game preserves to the city of Mysore. Mysore still has many trappings of the British Empire. This hotel is from the British era. We stayed across the street. Our hotel wasn't as attractive, but it was air conditioned. There were many pictures of street life and poverty in India that we did not photograph. In no way did we want even the people on the street to feel that we were making a spectacle of them. We met with the brethren in Mysore for 3 evenings. It was wonderful not to have to meet for one evening and then rush off to another city. We felt like we really got to know them personally. Again, the welcome garlands. Brother Puta Shudara, the elder, is on the right, and Brother Bala Chandra, the assistant elder. Puta Sudara means little beauty in their language. Bala Chandra means the rising moon. Brother Bala Chandra is called Balu by his friends. This is Brother Peter and his wife. Both are consecrated. Brother Babu and his sister's family. Babu owns a rickshaw taxi. That's a three-wheel vehicle, much like a golf cart, powered by a quarter horsepower motor, but equipped with a huge oompa, 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 which is a horn for clearing traffic that happens to be in the way. Babu would pick us up at the hotel and get us to the meetings. Brother Thomas Williams and his family. His daughters and their husbands behind them. Brother Pushparaj and his family. Aren't they absolutely beautiful? The sister on the right has recently become interested in the truth. She is from a Hindu family. We had a good time one afternoon with the children. They asked us many questions about our young people and what we have for Bible studies and so forth. Mysore is in a different state than Coimbatore. Mysore is in the state of Karnataka, and the language is Kannada. Much of the public schooling is conducted in English, so in this class there was no need to translate our discourses. It was obvious that even the children understood what we were presenting. Krupa is a word in the Kannada language. It means grace. You hear the word often in their prayers. The locals thought maybe we were Indians way back, but they couldn't figure out why we had such pale, colorless skin. One day we had lunch at the Williams house. Sister Williams prepared rice made with fresh coconut milk. And she also had chicken kebabs, fresh mangoes, fresh papaya, and of course, lots of hot chilies and cayenne. The main staple of the diet in southern India is rice. So if you like rice, you can do well. Fortunately, Tim and I both like rice. Back in Coimbatore, on the day we arrived, we had lunch at a vegetarian restaurant with five of the brethren. The lunch for that day cost $3 for all seven of us. The hotel in Coimbatore cost us $12 per night. Coconuts from Brother William's yard. This is how the brethren get around in India. You notice that some of the sisters have their own scooters. This is what they call a station wagon. The brother and a sister and four children. Only three or four brethren own automobiles in India that we know of. In Mysore, Balu took us to the palace of the former Maharaja. The architecture is beautiful, but it is really a sad monument to the suppression of the common people by the colonial empires pre-1914. There is no doubt that those kings have had their day. The people in every part of India are clamoring for more freedom. Politically, India is a time bomb. Punjab in the north, Kashmir in the north, they both want independence. Assam in the east wants independence. Tamil separatists want independence. Is this not the image of Daniel being ground into smaller and smaller pieces? Many of the areas that want to be free are Islam-dominated. So there is also a religious aspect to these conflicts. They want to be separate from the Hindus of India. The caste system also has had its day. Especially in the urban centers, the caste distinctions are disintegrating. Economically, our brethren are probably in the lower middle class of India. They seem to be well employed, do not want for physical food, and largely are in good health. Their occupations range from nursing to stenographer. This is Brother Edinburgh, professor of mechanical engineering. This brother is a policeman. This sister, his wife, is a policewoman. This brother, beside being the leader of the Coimbatore Ecclesia Chorus, works in rail transportation department. His wife is a professor of English, and her specialty is Shakespeare. Brother Joseph is a stenographer. His monthly salary is about $50. He and many other brethren have passed up advancement in order to have more time for their Bible student activities. Brother David works in a bank. As a matter of fact, banking is a popular profession amongst the brethren. School teaching is also a very popular profession among the brethren. A large number of the younger elders, such as Balu in the middle of this picture, are school teachers. Nursing is a popular profession among the sisters. One brother consecrated for over 20 years as a medical doctor. Brother Pushparaj, which means Flower King, works in the transportation department in Mysore. This brother prayed after Tim's public discourse. It was unusual because he prayed in English. Also, it was unusual because he was formerly a Hindu. Brother Naresh. Brethren, is it not, as you think about it, is it not a miracle that a man raised as a Hindu can come to an understanding of God's plan? Not only a faint understanding, but an accurate understanding of God's plan. Consecrate then and run for the prize of the high calling of God. Oh, brethren, certainly that is a miracle when those brethren can accept the truth. So we learn a lot. We learned a lot of lessons in India. Tim kept a diary which he typed up when we returned. It ended up being 24 typewritten pages. So I feel like I've only told you half of the story. What stays? What stays in my mind most of all is that without much contact or support, the brethren in India have kept the truth alive by living it daily. They are doing fine, but they would love additional spiritual food. There's much we could share with them. We were amazed how they lived without so many things, and yet we never heard of a single complaint. It was a powerful experience, my dear brethren, to see the truth being lived out in the daily lives of called ones in such a heathen Babylonish environment. Writers and travelers have long said, India will change you. We feel we've been changed for the experience of being in India. We hope we have been changed for the better. Our brethren in India are a tremendous example of living the truth, though surrounded on every side by the works of the adversary. The brethren in India send you their warm Christian love and greetings. Please pray for the brethren and in India, and remember them for their courageous, loving spirit of desiring